You're listening to The Back 40, the podcast for Ontario farmers, covering topics and issues that matter most to Ontario agriculture. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm the host of The Back 40, Mike Brine, agribusiness specialist at Trillium Mutual Insurance. Always a pleasant surprise when you're listening to the news and you hear someone's name that you know, and it's like, that's great news about them. And hey, I know that person. That was the case if we go back 4 years ago, listening to the news, and I heard the news that one of the people that I met at University of Guelph in my studies with the Ontario Agricultural College was going to be called to the Senate. That individual was Rob Black, and many of us will know him in the agricultural community. He's been involved with OMAFRA for 15 years. And with various leadership programs such as 4-H, Junior Farmers, the Advanced Agricultural Leadership Program. In February of 2021, he was recognized by the Canadian Western Agribition as one of the top 50 most influential people in agriculture. We're very pleased today to be joined by Senator Rob Black. Senator, welcome to the Back 40.
Thanks very much, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here. I've seen your podcasts promoted on social media, but I never thought I'd get a chance. So thanks for the opportunity. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
We're really pleased to have you as a guest. Like I said, I was surprised when I heard that you were becoming a senator, and in a good way. The first thought was the surprise. The second was what a great job that you're going to be and what a great representative that you will be for agriculture. How did you end up as a senator in Canadian government?
So I'll say at the outset, you and many others were surprised, including myself. It dates back to the summer of 2016. Prior to that, I'd always had an interest in politics. And I actually did run in 2014 as a municipal councillor and won the seat and sat for 3.5 years here in Wellington County. But the Senate thing came about as a result of an announcement on social media that our son Taylor saw. Taylor brought it to the supper table one night and suggested that either he or I should apply. And since he was too young, didn't have the criteria that was required, he said, Dad, you should apply. And so I looked at it and gave it some thought and threw in a 6-page application. I had to round up 3 letters of reference and I sent it in online and then promptly forgot about it. You know, nothing happened. That was the summer of 16. It was in February of 2017, I got an email back and they said my application wasn't accepted. They said I could withdraw it, I could leave it and they might never look at it again, or I could tweak it and send it back. And that's what I did. And again, promptly forgot about it. Early February 2018, I was driving and I got a call and it said, Mr. Black, this is the Prime Minister's office. Please hold for the Prime Minister. And with that, I pulled over, stopped, and we talked for about 14 minutes, talked about my background in agriculture, my background in rural community development, my background in 4-H and leadership development. And he said, I'd like you to bring those skills to the Senate of Canada. It's not something you turn down. And 3 days later, on February the 15th, Canada's Flag Day, the Prime Minister made the announcement at 2:00. And at that point, my life changed for the better. I'm a bit of a history nut. And so the process of swearing in is one that is the same that took place in 1867 and has since then. You know, it's kind of a neat thing to participate in that pomp and circumstance of being sworn in to the Senate of Canada. People ask about where do I sit? Am I a conservative or a liberal? I just want to, at the outset, say that I'm nonpartisan by nature and always have been. And so when you're sworn into the Senate, you have the opportunity to choose where you sit. I chose at that time to sit with the Independent Senators Group. And since that time, there are 4 groups or parties in the Senate chamber now. There's the Conservative Party of Canada, there's the Independent Senators Group, the Canadian Senators Group, and there's a Progressive Senate Group. And I belong to and am chair of the Canadian Senators Group.
I want to go back just a second here. What was the reaction of your family, particularly your son?
Taylor, he lives at home here, so he knew about some of the things that had transpired in that latter part of 17 and early 18, but it was still a surprise for all of them. My 4 kids and my wife were pleasantly shocked. It was a family decision, but again, as I say, it's not something you take lightly when you turn down the Prime Minister. So, you know, more importantly, I had to go tell my parents. I've had a number of roles and positions in my 35-year career. And so my parents have had a hard time keeping up with me anyway. So this was just, your what? everyone that I talked to was concerned about how was I going to work in Ottawa and live in Fergus, and would I mean a move? And my home continues to be Fergus, and I go to Ottawa when I need to work there.
What would you say was the biggest surprise when you got to Ottawa, and what was the biggest learning curve that you had when you started into the job as a senator?
Well, as you can imagine, it's a steep and ongoing learning curve, knowing where resources were and what my role was. But the most surprising thing, well, there's a couple. The wheels of government run slow. And we know that. We've known that for years. But you think you can get into politics and into parliament and maybe things will go quicker. Well, no, there is a reason why things go slow. But that's okay. It just takes time to make change. I was also shocked by the amount of reading that I had to do. I mean, I'm a reader, but I like to read fiction. So when you have three or four or five bills that have come in one day through into the Senate, and I'll be honest, I don't read them all complete page by page, but you have to at least understand what is coming across your desk. I have a wonderful office team that have my back 24/7, 365 days of the year. So we read things together, but you can get behind really quickly. And then you're behind the eight ball. And if you're asked a question in the chamber, or if you're asked a question by one of your stakeholder groups that you meet with regularly or that I talk to, you don't want to be caught behind the eight ball. So those are a couple of things. The other thing that was a surprise to me is the resources that are available to parliamentarians. And I say that very positively in the staff that we have that support us in the chamber, the pages, the Library of Parliament that can provide resources to me and my colleagues' staff, and how easy it is to pick up the phone and call the Canadian Federation of Agriculture or Ontario Mutual Insurance Association if you need an answer to a question that is troubling you, or you just want to have something to be able to have in your back pocket. So having access to those phone numbers, those people in positions of power are important and used.
Yes. And I would imagine that when the senator from the Canadian government phones, people are more likely to take your phone call as well, which is a good thing to have when you're trying to accomplish something, though, too.
It is. And, you know, you don't take advantage of that, but we certainly have at the office a number of those specific individuals and organizations that, you know, you can get a soundbite, whether it's just to add to a press release, an op-ed, or to be able to answer a question in the chamber that, you know, might be coming.
Now, you sit on several different committees with your role as a Senate. One of those committees that you sit on is the Standing Committee on Agriculture and Forestry. Can you give us just a little bit of a sense of what the purpose of the committee is and kind of what its scope is as well?
The Standing Committee on Agriculture and Forestry has as its mandate to examine legislation and study issues related to agriculture and forestry. And I've had the distinct pleasure to sit on this committee since I started. As of December of last year, I am now serving as chair. We examine bills that are referred to the committee. We investigate issues. We study topics of interest to the committee and to the industry, agriculture and forestry. Out of those studies and investigations that we do, we create reports. And those reports go on to government, many of them with recommendations that we hope will be taken seriously and will maybe move forward in the way of policy and legislation. Committees is a place where we can hear from experts about agriculture and forestry. So, you know, we're bringing in witnesses, and they may be farmers, they may be organization governance officials, they may be academics, they may be research scientists, etc. But we hear from the industry about the issue that we're studying. So that's what the committee's all about. We work together in committee. Our goal is to move the issue, move the bill, move the whatever study we're undertaking forward in a positive manner.
I would imagine that most people haven't even heard of the Standing Committee on Agriculture and Forestry, or if they have, they're probably interested in the industries in some way, shape, or form. Can you give us an example of an issue that you have tackled since 2018, since you started sitting on that committee?
Just after I got there, the committee released a report on land transfers across Canada, and they looked at the cost of land. They had witnesses in, they traveled across the country talking to experts on land transfer and cost of young people coming into agriculture. So that was a report that was tabled and sent on to government. One that I was totally involved in was a report called Made in Canada, Growing Canada's Value-Added Food Sector, bringing in witnesses, bringing in experts, but we also traveled across the country looking at industries that are doing good at adding value to Canada's agricultural supply. We've done ones on climate change and the whole idea of carbon in relation to Canada's agricultural sector. One that I hope to undertake in the near future is a soil study. Back when you and I were in university, you may recall that there was a Senate study that I believe we used as a textbook. It was called Soil at Risk, Canada's Eroding Future.
I do remember that one, yes.
Yeah, and that one was the last Senate soil study that was done in Canada 38 years ago. Times have changed and life has changed as we know it here in Ontario and across Canada. So I think it's time to undertake a new study. So I have put forward a proposal to the committee. We're in the midst of deciding what we'll be doing in the way of sort of those longer term studies. And my hope is that we might consider redoing the study. That's how we go about on top of bills that might come our way. We also look at longer term studies like that one might be, or we may look at short term pop-up studies, which we look at a very specific issue.
Yeah, I think that soil study is one that probably is long overdue. I know that we've changed a lot about how we do business here and how we look after the soil. We've done a fair amount on the protection of soils on the podcast that we've talked about. And I've mentioned before that a day in the wintertime when you've got a little bit of plowing sneaking through, that it's nice and windy, you could see the snow turn black as the soil blew. And we don't see that anymore because of the amount of no-till and minimum tillage. It'd be very interesting to see what the changes are from that perspective.
My hope, my understanding, my thinking is that back in 84, when this study was done, we weren't thinking about climate change. We weren't thinking about carbon sequestration in any big way. Today, that's all we talk about in many cases, in many areas of this country. And so I think this new study will be a game changer for all Canadians, not just agriculture, which the other one certainly was. But I think what could come out of this is a series of recommendations and information that will be important to all Canadians. That's my goal. It's not just a report for agriculture. It's a report for Canada with respect to mitigation, climate change, and things like that.
Yes, and the participants in agriculture and forestry are in a unique position to really influence that carbon sequestration and climate change because of the nature of what they do.
Absolutely. Canadian agriculture, I think they've done a great job of moving the needle with respect to cover crops and soil health. There's more to be done, as you and I both know, but I think we need to identify some of the gaps. You know, where we are today, what are the gaps? What needs to be done by government? What needs to be done by you and I as agriculture folks? What needs to be done by municipalities and other orders of government as well? So that's my hope anyways, what coming out of a study like this.
Yeah, it's too big of a problem just for one person to solve, just the person that's on the farm. It needs to have support all the way down the line on it.
But the person on the farm needs the support. I firmly believe they need to be acknowledged that they have done and are doing good things.
Yes, I think that's where it all starts. But as you say, they need that support in order to be successful and to move the needle. And just like you said about the learning curve about the Senate, we're always learning, we're always changing, and farmers are certainly on the forefront of changing technology that they use and how they do business. So this episode is posting on Canada's Ag Day. And certainly this is an important day for agriculture because of the visibility that it brings to agriculture in Canada, to all of Canadians. From your perspective there, can you comment a bit on what you see as the importance of it and the benefit of Canada's Ag Day?
So today, February 22nd, is Canada's 6th annual Agriculture Day. It started in 2016 as a day of celebration for the farming community, and it has only grown since then. And it's an exciting time to be involved in agriculture, and that day is exciting as well. I see it as a day to engage in positive dialogue around agriculture and food and to build that trust between producers and consumers in a variety of ways. All Canadians should have an immense pride in what our agriculture folks do. We feed Canadians, we feed the world, and we continue to do so even during a pandemic that's lasted 2 years now. And so this Ag Day, in my mind, represents an opportunity for our country to celebrate Canadian agriculture, Canadian food, and the people who grow that food and provide it every day, day in and day out, from farms to forks, right? I think it's a great day to celebrate. And I'm delighted that this is the day that you're airing this podcast.
We started last year. We actually timed the start of the podcast so that we would be and have something available for Canada's Ag Day. I was fortunate enough to be able to talk to Marty Seymour from FCC, who was instrumental in getting this up and running in 2016. I was in Ottawa for the celebration in 2020, right before we shut everything down. I thought it was a fabulous day. It certainly has changed because of the pandemic. We don't have that ability to be able to meet in person as we were doing at that point in time, but there's still lots of stuff going on.
And then we will get back to that. Let me just tell you a quick story. February 2018, the day I was appointed was the day I received a phone call from the Prime Minister was the 12th of February. I was headed to Ottawa for Canada's Ag Day, which was the 13th that year. He told me on the 12th. And so I had to go through an entire day of Canada's Ag Day with what I knew in the back of my head, and I'm surrounded by, you know, the folks that are there. It's exciting. Friends of mine, colleagues, classmates, and I couldn't say a thing.
I've got a secret and I can't tell you. And I can't even tell you I've got a secret.
It was exactly it. One of my mentors that day said, Rob, what's happening? What's shaking? And I said, Kim, I can't tell you. And he's the type of individual that's fine, you know, because you move on. We moved on to something else. But 3 days later, it was quite a conversation we had. Just a small story about Canada's Ag Day 2018. But this is a day to celebrate all things agriculture, right? Before we end this conversation, I want to talk about Food Day in Canada as well. And we'll do that a little later. But Canada's Ag Day is a day to celebrate all things agriculture and say thanks to the producers, the processors, everyone involved in the value chain that gets our food from field to fork.
Is your organization in need of funding for a capital project? Trillium Mutual's Roots Community Fund provides funding towards projects such as renovations, expansions, and equipment purchases that support rural Ontario. Roots helps ensure that these organizations will remain a crucial part of the local community. To learn more about Roots, including how to apply, visit our website at trilliummutual.com and click Community at the top of the page. You know what? And now's as good a time as any. Let's talk about Canada's Food Day.
Sure.
Another important day to celebrate Canadian agriculture and the role that they play in making sure we have food on our table.
Food Day in Canada is always the Saturday of the August long weekend and has been since 2003 when Anita Stewart, who was a food activist, she was a cookbook author, University of Guelph's first Canadian food laureate. She started it because of BSE in 2003, yeah. And she wanted to support Canada's beef farmers. A champion of local food here in this area in Ontario and across Canada, Anita started Food Day in Canada, and it has grown since 2003. Now, we sadly lost Anita a year and a bit ago, but in the fall, I introduced a bill in the Senate chamber that would see a Food Day in Canada Act, it was called, and would see that Saturday in August, or it could be July because of where the holiday lands, but that Saturday be known as Food Day in Canada, officially, not as a holiday, just as a named day. We're working that through the process. It has gone through first reading in our chamber. It will finish up with second reading and then be referred to the Standing Committee in Agriculture and Forestry for our committee to look at it further. And then it will go back to the Senate chamber for third reading, debate and third reading. And then it goes to the House of Commons for their consideration. So, I mean, it's not a quick process as we talked about earlier, but I'm hopeful. Will it be this year? Who knows? I'm hopeful in this parliament that we might be able to see the Food Day in Canada Act granted royal assent, and then that day be known as Food Day in Canada. Again, to recognize the work that our farmers do, our processors, our restaurateurs, truckers, all the folks in the value chain that ensure that we have food on our plates 365 days a year. So my hope is that we'll see that at some point, and I'm just delighted that I've at least got it forward in this parliament. And when and if this happens, let's talk again about it.
Absolutely. No, I'd love to do that. That's something that I think should be something that's officially recognized in this country. And I'm glad that there's some legislation that you've put forward. And we'll keep our fingers crossed. I know the speed of government suggests it may not be this year, but hopefully by next year we could have that. But you never know, right?
But we still can all celebrate Food Day Canada on July 30th of this year. which is the Saturday of the August long weekend.
You know what? We'll celebrate it whether it's recognized officially or not, but it would be nice to see that official recognition. Fingers crossed, hopefully it'll happen. We've talked a lot about the different issues that you've tackled there. I'm interested, though, what do you see as the biggest challenges lying ahead for Canadian agriculture as we go forward?
So I've got a few that come to my mind, and one of them we worked on yesterday with Bell Canada Let's Talk. Supporting mental health initiatives within the Canadian agriculture sector is extremely important. I think there needs to be a Canadian agricultural strategy for mental health supports nationally. And so, you know, when we hear stories like 68% of farmers are more susceptible than the general population to chronic stress, and you know that, you know how that comes about. I know how that comes about. So I think we need a strategy. And I'm really pleased to see various provincial governments putting more money into this. Our own Ontario provincial government has done some good things in the last few months, and working with the Federations of Agriculture and Canadian Mental Health Associations and other organizations that are doing good things. The Listowel Ag Society, not far from you, has created some great resources supporting farmers' mental health. But that's only known to folks that you and I talk to and folks around Listowel. This is a national issue. We need to support it nationally. So that's one. The whole idea of fighting climate change, agriculture, I think, can be a driver around fighting climate change, and has been and is and will continue to do so. But I don't think enough people recognize it and recognize that agriculture can also be and is a solution to it as well. So there's an amazing potential for what we can do. And I think we need to get that across too. Strengthening Canada's food system and addressing food security. 1 in 8 Canadians struggle to be able to put food on their table. I just wrote an opinion op-ed just last week that indicated that more than 4 million Canadians, of a quarter of that number, children, had trouble accessing affordable, nutritious food in the recent past. That can't continue. We need to sort that out. And this morning on social media, I see that the Canadian egg farmers have just doubled their donations to food banks in Canada. And we see that with the eggs, we see that with the pork, we see that with beef, we see that with all of our agriculture commodities. And that is so important. But I think we collectively as a nation have to work to strengthen our food system and address food insecurity. This pandemic, it has shown the cracks in the system. I think it has also shown folks have risen to the challenge as well. Our colleagues in agriculture have done that. Labor is another issue. The food and beverage industry is facing debilitating labor shortage. Coming into the pandemic, there's a 300,000 person gap because of COVID. That number is growing. And I'm hearing stress related to that at the processor level as well. We don't have enough people to make the product that we're doing. And it's not just food processing, it's manufacturing as well. So we need to deal with the labor shortage. And again, I'm delighted that nationally, three organizations have stepped up to work on a national labor strategy: the Canadian Federation of Agriculture, Canadian Agriculture Human Resource Council, and an education organization as well. So that's another one. The final one that I want to mention is the whole digitization of agriculture. Access to high-speed internet in Listowel or in St. Mary's or here in Fergus, I still have daily issues with it. And I live 4 miles north of a town that has high-speed internet. But when we start talking about digital agriculture and smart farms and smart farm yards, if we don't have access to that technology, we can't ever expect to raise the efficiency levels and move to that next stage of agriculture, which universities like the University of Guelph and Olds College in Alberta, they're doing great things around smart farm and digitization, but they need that backbone, that infrastructure that some of us just don't have. So those are some of the challenges that I see facing us right now.
It's interesting you pick up on that, because we're doing this over a Zoom call and we're relying on that digital technology. And I read an article not that long ago that suggested that farms that had access to good Wi-Fi and internet were up to 10% more profitable. It makes a huge difference on what you're able to do on farm. So you've given us an idea of what you think are the major issues facing agriculture. What are the challenges ahead for Senator Black?
Thanks. Challenges. Well, I'll be upfront, I need to get much better at my French. I don't have to speak French in the Senate of Canada. Everything's translated, but I need to be better at my French. And you know, I gave that up many years ago in high school, and I regret that now. And I would encourage anyone to keep that in mind as our younger people are going through school. But it's not an easy task. But I sit and I work as a parliamentarian in Canada. So I think it's important that I can at least better understand and maybe speak a bit of it as well. So that's one challenge that I need to work on. I've got 15 years left. I can sit in the Senate of Canada until I'm 75. I've got some other aspirations and goals that I'd like to see undertaken that I might be involved in during those 15 years. But what isn't a question is my continued advocacy about agriculture and rural. That is where I plan to spend my time. That's my background. That's my passion. And so your listeners, my colleagues can expect me to hear me talking about agriculture until the day I leave. But with that comes the need to keep up to date. And so, you know, when I'm not sitting in Ottawa in the Senate chamber, I do like to get out and talk to folks and hear from folks across Canada. And so to that end, last summer, I spent some time in Alberta. I spent some time in Saskatchewan in the fall, across Ontario, talking to people. I tell people I can't speak about agriculture in the Senate chamber and to my colleague if I don't hear it from you and know that. So I welcome phone calls. I welcome an email to my office in Ottawa just saying, does the senator know about this issue that's taking place in Perth County? Because it may also be taking place in another province or county. So it's keeping in touch with the folks I represent, agriculture and rural from Ontario and across Canada. Continuing to strengthen and enhance agriculture and rural communities across the country, across this province, would be another challenge that I continue to work on. I really do want to see us get to the Senate soil study at some point. I got 15 years. But I'm hopefully it'll be sooner than later. And back to the Food Day in Canada bill, that's a challenge for me. It's a positive challenge. Working that through the process from start to finish and seeing it proclaimed by the Governor General is a goal, an aspiration of mine. And that's for agriculture and food. It's also in memory of my good friend, Anita Stewart.
Yes, you've given us a lot of challenges there. You've pretty well filled up, I think, that 15 years. You've got that pretty well filled for the different goals and things that you'd like to accomplish. If people want to find out more about what is going on in the Canadian Senate and more specifically what you're doing and what the Standing Committee on Agriculture and Forestry are doing, how do they go about finding that information?
I'd encourage folks to follow me on my social media platforms. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook under Senator Rob Black. I don't think enough people follow the Senate, and I know folks might think it's a boring thing to do, but keep track of what's being undertaken in the Senate committees. In my case, in agriculture and forestry, but there's 16 or 17 other standing committees. And so I encourage folks to follow what's taking place. And you can see the speeches that I make, or speeches that are made on behalf of agriculture that are noted in the committee website. You can see what we're undertaking. You can see who we have or are calling in as witnesses through the agendas. I just think it's important to stay in touch, because if you see something that you think I should know about or my colleagues, or if we're discussing something in our committee or another committee, it's as simple as sending an email to the clerk of that committee saying, here's my thoughts on that issue that this committee, agriculture or otherwise, are studying. And we get that. We get that on occasion. The clerk then shares it with the committee, and it's important to know what Ontarians and Canadians are thinking. So I would encourage folks to keep track of what's happening in my life through social media and in the Senate and our committee work as well.
Speaking as somebody who's been involved in agriculture all my life, I really do appreciate the work that you do and the representation that we get as citizens of Ontario and Canada, and the advocacy and voice that you represent for Canadian agriculture. Senator Black, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to be with us on the Back 40 today.
Thanks, Mike. This has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it, and I look forward to doing it again sometime and running across you, chatting again face-to-face somewhere down the road.
Looking Thanks. Forward to it. Thank you very much. Join us next time when we'll be talking with Abby Steck from Elephant Thoughts. Elephant Thoughts is an organization that provides opportunity to disadvantaged youth. They've purchased a new property and they're using agriculture to bring different cultures and backgrounds together. That's next time on the Back 40. You've been listening to the Back 40. brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance. Be sure to subscribe to the Back 40 wherever you find your favorite podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. The Back 40, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm Mike Brine. Until next time, take care and stay safe.